Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston, how are you this morning? It's this morning. We had a bit of a delay.
Early morning.
Audible. Recording. Well, we had an audible first because yesterday, the 25th, was the recognized holiday for Utah, basically Utah's 4th of July, the 24th, Pioneer Days. And I went, a buddy of mine gave me some tickets to the Pioneer Days Rodeo up in Ogden, Utah. So went and saw some cowboys.
Nice.
It was nice. Rodeos are fun.
Rodeos are fun. And even if you're a kid or whatever, I think they're all very entertaining. So
yeah, it's a good show. Sure. No, it was fun. But we didn't get home till like super late. So we postponed to today, but then we had a little bit of a late one again.
That's all good. As long as it's happening.
It's happening. We'll get it out. And just in time for, I don't even know, Detroit, the Rocket City, or Rocket Mortgage, Detroit City, Detroit Rock City, whatever
you want to call it.
Whatever you want to call it. Not a deep field when you've got Jeff Ogilvie in the field. Ricky's taking advantage, though. He made a cut last week.
Yeah.
So he's trying to just get as many points as he can, trying to get back in it. Yeah, who else? There was some other ones that you're naming off there. It was a list of heavy hitters for sure.
Yeah, not quite. I mean, it's going to be a good field, but not that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, Finau's back into it. He's probably one of the higher ranked players. So,
is he playing this week? I don't think he's playing.
Yeah,
this week. Is
he's in the field. So,
is he in the field?
Mr. 16th in the world is in the field.
Just trying to keep that house streak going.
Hey, I mean, given how he's been playing the last 2 months, I would definitely take advantage and play golf.
Oh yeah, you gotta when you're hot, you gotta play for sure. I'm just looking, Jason Day's in the field. I mean, it's not a terrible field, but Harris English is in the field. Max Homa is in the field. So like I said, it's not a crazy good field, but there's some good players.
Yeah.
That are there. So I don't know. Let's kind of dive in, right? We're excited. I mean, Sunday was a good day for us in Utah for sure.
Oh, heck yeah.
Finau gets a win. His third win on tour. Did it in comeback fashion.
Oh, yeah.
With a little help. Got Piercy help out.
Yeah.
A lot.
A lot, actually.
A lot.
I mean, there were other guys sniffing the leaderboard as well, but you know, as it came down the stretch, there was only like one guy left. So,
yeah, it was, I mean, it was like I said, he came up clutch, right? He goes on a little bit of a birdie run. I think he makes three in a row. Yeah, uh-huh. Birdie's 11, and then goes three in a row to kind of just pull away. Because I think right then, I think he birdies 14 as at about the same time that Piercy is, or right before Piercy makes his, because he goes to one back of Piercy, and then Piercy makes a seven. But I mean, it just a really, I mean, a bad break for the first one. So he hits a shot, and his tee shot plugs in the lip of the bunker. So he chunks it out into the bunker, but then he takes way too aggressive of a line and hits it in the water. So, I mean, that one, that's on him, then leaves it short. Just a little short, chips up, about chips it in, but it makes a seven. And then, you know, another bogey, another couple of bogeys and a birdie coming down the stretch. But just... I thought he was going to pull away. He's two under through six, and he had, a three-shot lead going in. So at that point, you think he's up. I think he was up like four shots, and you're thinking after seven holes and he's two under, 20 under, you're like, oh, he's got this in the bag. And then he bogeys eight and nine and then 11. Birdie's 12, and you're like, oh, okay, back on track. But then bogeys 13, triples 14, bogeys 15, and it was like
14 adios. Was just a train wreck.
And it was, like I said, he got a bad break. You get stuck in the lip of in the edge of a fairway bunker like that. That's a bad break. But then you can't compound that by hitting it in the water, like not even close in the water. It was well short, right? You just can't. You can't do that. You've got to play out to the right and just trust that you're going to get up and down from there for bogey, right?
Yeah. Well, it was, I mean, it's super entertaining. And, you know, despite the winning score almost being 20 under, the course, the scoring drops off pretty dramatically as you look at the leaderboard. And so, the guys that were really good, they went low. But there's an 8 minute and 30 second highlight reel of PGA Tour players this week or last week
just
hitting it in the water.
Yeah,
hitting it in the water.
dumping it.
There's a lot of danger around this course. It's a beast.
Well, they said that this was, I think, second only to
Sawgrass Honda, or something.
The Honda.
Oh, the Honda. Yeah.
It may have been third. Sorry, it may have been third. I think it was the Honda, because like you're gonna hit it in the water at least three times at the Honda, no matter who you are, it seems like. The Honda, and then it was TPC, and then here at the TPC Twin Cities.
Yeah. And it was windy out there too. By no means was it a walk in the park, but it just goes to show that the guys that went low, they were just really, really good.
Right. So, Tony did hit it in the water on the final hole.
Yeah. But awesome win for our dog, Tony. Utah's best.
He's definitely Utah's best. And we had three guys with Utah ties, two from the state of Utah and one that went to Brigham Young University. They were playing in the Corn Ferry tournament. The Price Cutter Charity Championship. And you had Zach Blair, who is just coming off medical major medical. So he's coming off there playing, I think he's played three events now, mm-hmm. made all the cuts. I mean,
yeah.
So he's getting his game back into form. Patrick Fishburn, former Brigham Young player. All three of these are Brigham Young players. I will say, as a Ute fan, that doesn't bode well for.
How many Utes were in the field?
That would be zero.
Dang.
They're getting better. They're getting some on the lower tours. We've got a few on the Canadian tour. They're getting back, but they still don't have the pedigree that BYU does for sure. But so you had Patrick Fishburn and then Peter Quest, who was leading after round one and then kind of just came in even through the last three rounds. But getting the cut made, he struggled to make the cut in the Corn Ferry events. And when he was getting sponsors exemptions last year into PGA Tour events, I think he made one cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's
pretty tough.
Yeah. So it's coming around. Hopefully that kind of will spark him. But yeah, it was a good week for Utah. Like I said, Tony was nails. Like I said, he had a four shot lead going into that. Yeah. Four shot lead.
Yeah.
Going into the final. And so he, dumping it in the water wasn't the biggest deal, but
no,
it's not exactly how you want to.
Well, and making a bogey with a penalty stroke, like, it's not an easy task.
No.
And then you've got the pressure of the tournament on the line, and that course is no stranger to somebody just absolutely triple bogeying a hole. So
dumping it in the water. So, like I said, it was there. I mean, obviously, I think it was the easiest hole on the course that week. So, it was there. Although a lot of people were not tearing it up coming down the stretch. I think he was playing with Hoagie, and Hoagie parred it. So. Like I said,
I will say
solid win.
The cooler shots was, did you see him use the toe of his putter?
Yeah.
Out of the grass.
Was it in round three?
I think so. Round three. It's so good. It's one thing to do that shot. It's another one to can it.
What the heck? Yeah.
Awesome.
The way that sat down, right? You've seen a few people do it from that thing, but yeah, making it from there is really cool. But he gets a break. I mean, he hits even on 17 when he pars the par three. I mean, he gets a little bit of a break because he almost hits it in the water on that hole too.
That was
so close. It's not like it was clean coming down the stretch, but we'll take a three shot win for sure. We'll take it one shot win for him, but it was good. Like, say, Piercy, rough day, but it was, like, say, not wasn't like said again one of those fields that's just he had a couple of good players, but with what looked like was going to be a runaway victory for Piercy, was a runaway victory for Finau, actually. Which kind of crazy. So
yeah, that was a pretty big swing, and like, such a good sport, Piercy. Like, you could just be totally pissed and just decide to drive your rental car right into a wall after something like that. But he actually went up and congratulated Tony and recognized for that.
So. I mean, he seems standoffish, but I think he's a pretty good guy. I think he's pretty just kind of keep to himself, but I think he's a pretty good guy otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Not otherwise, but despite some of his demeanor, where it seems like he might be the guy you don't want to hang around, I think he's a pretty good guy. And like I said, doesn't show a ton of emotion even after his triple. But he's a guy that I'm actually surprised hasn't committed to LIV, because he's kind of that perfect candidate for it.
I'm surprised Tony hasn't, to be honest.
Like I said, I really think that there's some of these guys that are going to wait because they want the FedEx Cup money and then bail.
That's a good point. I'm sure there are some quality players that are doing really well. Because money talks, man, and you're in a good position to make money.
Jacob, it's only a few weeks away. So, it'll be interesting. Sunday was a good day for golf. I got up and watched the end, just like they had. I watched the end of the Evian Championship over in France for the, I guess, LPGA. LET Ladies European Tour. But it was actually really a solid tournament. Brooke Henderson makes about a 15 footer on the last hole. After kind of, you know, being three over through six holes after she had the lead and losing it, and then to come back and birdie three of her final five holes to win it, which is pretty crazy there, but fun tournament and another $1 million purse for the ladies. Like I said, they're bumping their purses up. I mean, obviously it goes down significantly by the time you get to the end of it, but $1 million purse, bumping that up. Obviously, like, say, when people say that the LIV has done nothing for the game of golf, I think people that are making some checks right now would disagree, because it's just got to go up, right? People are making more money now because of it, right? And it may not be exactly the way people want to see it happen, but like I said, I think it's good, and we'll see. Right? Making an
impact. Yeah,
it's making an impact, and we'll see where it goes from there. But following the Evian, I was able to change it over and watch Darren Clarke win the Senior Open Championship. It was quite wet, but you know, those guys, it just seems like for the most part, when you get guys like Darren Clarke and some of the guys that were in the lead for it, they just look like they're out just in a leisurely stroll, right? It's just like, we're just gonna play golf. And he was cool and just easy. I mean, the putt that he hits, last hole's a par five, so there's some drama there, right? For others than that, but he hits one, good drive, right up next to the green. And as a lot of those links courses, there was some real estate to cover. And he puts it from just off the green, probably 80 feet to about 2.5 feet. It was classic. So good to get it there, and ends up edging out Hodrick, who is vying for a second major in a row, who's been playing really, really good. And another guy who's been playing really, really good, but did not play really, really good. Yesterday, because he was par, shot par. That's how they just put it, as par. But Steve Alker, but three putted the last hole for a par. But the top three, I mean, that guy is a money-making machine right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a betting man, but I should probably put money on Alker because the guy's in the top five every week.
Seems like every week he's up there pushing it. Yeah, like I said, top 10 if he's not pushing for that lead,
Yeah.
that win. But so that was fun, and then was able to watch Tony clean it up at the end. But speaking of Liv, we talked about rumors last week. I thought we had
Yeah.
talked about when it did, but we now have actual commits. Jason Kokrak, I think after he hit his ball into oblivion and walked off the course, it spelled his he exit his stays left and never came back. Charles Howell the third, which like I said, Kokrak's a pretty solid get. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out where Kokrak was on the OWGR. Well,
I can't
we can
remember
find it
that.
here.
But I was pretty. It's funny, I'm always surprised at the names that pop up, like who did it this week? And to see Charles Howell the third, I was like, whoa, this guy's been on the PGA Tour for close to 2 decades, so.
Yeah, and then you've got like say Kokrak, who's 36 in the OWGR. Yeah, he's got to win this year, right? Couple of pretty solid, top 15 at the Masters. So, three PGA Tour wins. So it's not like you can't say with this guy, it's not you can't be like, oh, just somebody who can't win anymore, right? He's won three times
Yeah. Oh,
in the
he's
last
definitely.
2 years. So it's not like he's not making any money, right? He made 5 mil last year, 2.3 already this year. So he's right in there for, was pushing to make the tour championship and he bounces. So
Yeah.
they're getting some guys that have some cachet. And one of those guys that has some cachet, well, two of those guys, right? David Faraday commits. Did you watch his? I mean, it was a little cheesy, but where they're like talking, they did a whole video about welcoming the new. The new commit to the Live Tour, and they're talking about this, and then it comes on, and it's Faraday. He's like, "What do you expect, a player?" So, but I think he's gonna kind of get the leashes
Hey.
taken off, right?
Well,
The reins taken
here's a
off.
guy. I mean, think about this. He's and just look at his career. He's always been an on-course reporter, right? And he'll throw in some jokes there, but he's not behind the bench, like in front of the TV as one of those main announcers.
No.
And I wonder if he gets that opportunity, or is he going to be on course reporting again? Maybe
I
that's what he
don't
wants to do.
know. Maybe that's what he, it could be what he wants to do, but like you say, you're taking a guy who pissed off Augusta National, so he couldn't do commentating for them anymore. And this, I mean, the thing about that is he had a pretty good relationship. I think they just, I don't know when he finished with the Faraday show on the Golf Channel, but like, what are they going to do now? Because they lived on reruns of that show
Yeah.
for a long time. Are they just gonna keep playing it, or now is he in exile? Are they gonna erase the tapes? I mean, what are they gonna do with that?
I don't know.
So it's like I said, it's starting to come to a head. Like I said, there's an article and I've got to go back and read it, but it was like, you know, how the PGA Tour and LIV Tour can coexist. Well, yeah, I think it's going to have to. It's not, you know, at some point people are like, oh, it's going away in a year. I'm like, in a couple of years, I'm like, it might, but they're making some pretty big moves. They're looking like they want to be here to stay.
Yeah.
And one of those players that is kind of a shocker because of how much like pub and respect the Ryder Cup gets. Having the Ryder Cup, European Ryder Cup captain commit to the LIV and give up the captaincy was pretty surprising.
Yeah, that really was. I mean, if you really dig into it, because it's like, typically you'd want to be a part of something, but I guess if you've played in the Ryder Cup like your whole life, it kind of doesn't really matter for him, at least, because, or maybe he thought he could still do it and join another golf league. But
no, I think he knew, because they actually relieved him of his captaincy duties before he officially announced. So he obviously wasn't talked to him and said, hey, I'm going. I know what this means.
Uh-huh.
Right. So now they're kind of, I mean, it's not, is it this year? There's no President's Cups this year, right? Ryder Cups next year. So, I mean, they've got plenty of time to get that. But, I mean, realistically, especially with who they chose for the Ryder Cup captaincy in Henrik Stenson and who they were probably going to choose for the U.S. Ryder Cup captaincy in Phil Mickelson to kind of spark that whole battle at the British Open deal. And now they're both gone. So now you're going to get Zach Johnson. Who are you going to, like, who's going to come in and fill in? Is it going to be, because Bernhard's done it, hasn't he?
It's no longer captaincy.
He might not have, but he's playing. But I mean, Harrington's done it. So who do you get to fill that void?
Yeah, I haven't even thought about it that hard, but no. I guess that's because it doesn't mean that much to me.
it's a great event to watch.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like right now, it's still a year and a half away. It's not front of mind. And really, captains, I think, make a minimal difference, but that's just me.
And what I'm wondering is, if you really look at what's happening to the European Tour, I guess you can still have a pretty good Ryder Cup, because even though all the European players are good are playing on the PGA Tour, but the last Ryder Cup was just an absolute swashbuckling of the European Tour or the European team, and so I just don't see the European team putting out much of a fight anymore, and I don't know why that is, but I will say that the LIV Tour is probably going to be affecting that as they start to gain more and more European Tour players, because the European Tour itself has just kind of been sidelined as a growing tour instead of an actual tour. So anybody that's worth anything on the Euro is really got two options: PGA Tour, which if we want to be real, hard money, and LIV Tour, easy money. And you know, and that's for players that are worth something, right?
Right.
If you're 149th on the PGA Tour and you're from England, you're probably not getting a full-blown contract to play for LIV. But we're talking about the players that would be competing in the Ryder Cup anyways, right? So,
yeah. Well, I mean,
talking about.
So you're looking at this, right? Paul Casey, who was, I mean, as of, well, maybe that's not it. It's,
It again, really cool event, but I don't know if the European Tour will be what it once was, you know?
So you got, yeah. So Paul Casey was 7 on that list.
Uh-huh.
And in an automatic qualifying spot. That's gone.
Yep. Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, they sometimes always find a way to get on there.
Richard Bland was close, and he's gone. Lee Westwood's gone, and he was in a qualifying position with world points.
Yeah.
So that's two guys for sure that are in qualifying spots that are gone.
Yeah.
And I think after the season, I think Tyrrell Hatton, who is 3 on there, is gone. Like I said, it's the right fit for that guy. We've talked about this.
It's the tour for Tyrrell Hatton. That's what it is. And so it's just.
I mean, so you're going to get a few more guys that I think.
And again, this isn't LIV Golf's fault. This is the PGA Tour and the PGA and the RNA just straight up saying no.
Well, not even talking, right?
Yeah, they're destroying their own product. They're literally shooting themselves in the foot, and that's on them.
Funny thing is, so they still have that, but so if they not, they had to have come out and said, because let's see. I guess the highest ranking U.S. player is, I guess, Dustin Johnson. He was in an automatic qualifying position.
Yeah.
As of that. And then you go down a little bit. Taylor Gooch was 15. Kevin Na was 21. So, like I said, it's not affecting the U.S. team as much. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. Like I said, I still think there's some shoes to fall.
Yeah.
That are on that. So,
well, and this is an interesting question that I have about LIV Golf. And this is interesting. We have a set number of players in each event, 48. Well, the next event, there's going to be 3 more announcements or 4 more or whatever. Who's getting kicked off the tour?
So,
right?
Let's see it, because they have I think what they're going to do is it's going to kind of be like a European soccer type thing where you get relegated, but they're feeding right to the Asian tour, Korean tour, or whatever. So there's a couple tours that they're just feeding right into, right? If you're off here, you're guaranteed starts in that other one. So you're not necessarily losing.
Yeah.
That. So.
Well, that makes sense. And I hopefully, you know, because that's what I'd like to see, is just more making sure people don't lose everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's gonna be interesting. It's definitely gonna be interesting.
The great thing about this week too is that it's at a Trump Bedminster.
They actually have a couple Trumps, I think, and that's
they do. So this is the first one, Trump National at Bedminster, after for dumb reasons. Like, they're in the PGA Tour, they've done some idiotic things, but pulling it from tournaments from Trump golf courses just made zero sense.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably where the bad decisions really started. I mean, and I think we talked about it. It was a circus, everything that the PGA Tour did around that. Alienating thousands of workers just because they're making a political statement about the president of the United States. Congratulations.
Yeah, stupid. Yeah, so the season-ending one is at Doral, Trump National Doral.
Mm-hmm.
Taking professional golf back to the Blue Monster, baby.
I love that course. I remember so many amazing tournaments with Tiger at that course, and to not see it on the rotation was pretty sad.
Yeah, it's there. Like I said, and I don't know these other, but where are they doing it? Where is it at in Boston? Oh, the International, which is, I guess, is a pretty good course and a tough course from what I have been told. So, like I said, that's another thing is you're getting good golf courses. You're getting much, like, leaderboards are going up, right? So, getting better and better.
Yeah, so. And I actually like that we're seeing another highly televised tour in golf courses that are great, but we really haven't seen before. Yeah. Like, yeah. I, it was a treat to watch Pumpkin Ridge.
Yeah.
And,
you know, so it's a good golf course. So,
yeah.
It's just, to me, like I said, there's some things that they need to clean up and they need to do a little bit better, but I think they will, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, by adding Faraday to the broadcast, like if you thought the broadcast was even just a smidge dry,
it's like not going to be anymore.
You now have one of the most colorful and most experienced on-course reporters like ever. I mean, this guy has been covering PGA Tour events for 2 decades, and some of the most relevant sound bites around Tiger have been Faraday's voice. And so that's pretty exciting. I'm actually looking forward to tuning in and seeing what Faraday brings to the tournament. So more so than Cochrane or Charles Howell III, to be honest. Yeah. I want to know what Faraday.
Faraday's gonna say and just like I said, I think he'll take the reins off, so he'll be able to kind of be who he is, which I think is a good thing. One thing that we didn't talk about that's kind of a rumor mill, I guess he's named his price, Charles Barkley.
Ah, oh, Charles. Yeah, and another Chuck. To live. Yeah, he would bring something interesting as well. You know, I think a lot of people really have enjoyed him during these matches on TV, and he's more of a color commentator. So it'll be interesting to see him kind of get involved as well.
So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Let's see. And some of it, I'm just actually reading it here, and like some of the players, they got fined by the DP World Tour, but some of the ones that didn't get invited back just went back and they paid the fines, and now they're eligible to play again.
Hey, there you go.
So it'll be interesting to see where it goes there, and then some of the other players return to the Asian Tour.
Uh-huh.
Amateur circuits, because we're a couple of amateurs there. But I don't know what they did with like Ogletree and some other ones. But my guess is they got their their money. I mean, they're getting there, and then they're getting shifted to the Asian tours and like say DP World Tour, I guess, if you get there. So I don't know. Looks like they're just getting filtered back to their other tours, but
life goes on.
Life goes on. I mean, the thing about it is if you think about it, whatever Ogletree got paid, I mean, obviously he didn't have to pay any expenses. I'm pretty sure everything was taken care of. And he won $120,000, right, in his first event, plus whatever. I mean, it may have been minimal, but my guess is it was still a couple hundred thousand for him to play in that first event. I don't think he's like sad that he only got to play in one event.
No, not at all.
So, and like I said, and if the two shoes drop that are the biggest tickets, if Cam Smith goes, if Hideki goes, like I said, people are like, and I've heard, and it's been reported. I saw that somebody reported that they offered Hideki huge cash.
I heard 400 million,
which is a lot. That's more than I heard. I heard 250, but I heard 400 in the latest one, but originally I heard 250. But people are like, oh, that's crazy. And I'm like, you realize that Japan is a golf.
Oh,
like they're crazy about golf. And he is the most popular player in Japan. So in turn, as soon as he goes over, you get that entire country watching live.
Yeah. And I've seen this happen firsthand. When I was living down in Brazil, countries like that, I'm not saying Japan is like Brazil, but I'm just saying countries in general, they really do have a fanaticism around the best player in a particular sport from their country.
Yep.
And I saw that, especially in Brazil. Like I got in a conversation with them about tennis, and they were like, oh, this guy, he's the best. He's the best there is ever. He's so amazing. And I looked him up, and it's like the best he'd ever ranked was like 11th on the tennis world circuit, which isn't saying he's nobody. He's a good tennis player, but he's not the best. But the fanaticism around him, it was incredible. And so you can really win over a country by finding the right sports personality to take a place. And Hideki is probably that person because he's easily the most decorated Japanese golfer that's really ever played. So, yeah,
and like I said, there's one player who would get that in the United States, one player, right? And that's Tiger, but he would get the world. But I don't think there's rumors that he's being paid to be an ambassador to the PGA Tour.
Oh, one thing I can tell you is more players are coming. I don't know who, I don't know when.
Yeah. You haven't seen the last of it. Yeah.
Every event, there's a new announcement with 3 to 4 more players, and it's going to keep going.
So, well, I think said the one thing that I would say there is if I'm betting on somebody in a business battle,
yeah,
my money's going on Greg Norman. Because if you've looked at his track record, it's pretty good.
And it's pretty good.
He does have some animosity towards the PGA Tour. Some of that may be warranted, some of it may not be, but he's done pretty good for himself and everything else. So am I going to take him or Jay Monahan in that battle? I'm taking Greg Norman all day long. If it comes down to making the moves that you need to do to make this successful, and to and to grow it the way it needs to. Yeah. Plus he has Mana has some money behind him, obviously, because he was hiding $60 million plus somewhere. But he doesn't have FU money like Live toward us.
I've seen quite a few memes and they're pretty well fitting too, but it's almost every single time Dumb and Dumber comes to mind because the money is just so ridiculous, right?
There's some great memes with that, but like I said, it'll be interesting to see. Like I said, you've got about let's pull this back up. Because it's not too far away. Why is it not pulling up? There we go. Before I think that kind of shoe drops. And it could be, like I said, because it's just the President's Cup. Yep. Like right after the Tour Championship, right before the President's Cup. End of August.
Yeah. Or maybe even after the President's Cup, too.
Maybe.
I think Cam Smith is probably thinking FedEx Cup, play the President's Cup, and I'm out.
Yeah. He's like, I'll just commit to next year. Right.
Because
you got Liv, that its last event is. Oh, it's in October. So, I mean, technically, he could do that and play in Chicago. Bangkok, Jeddah, and Saudi Arabia, and then Miami. So technically, he could get in get in some events. He actually might miss Chicago. I'm trying to remember exactly the date. It's actually right before. I think the President's Cup's like right before that in. And it's in North Carolina, so it's just a quick jump. That would be an easy one to do on there. But yeah, so he could still make that jump after the President's Cup and catch the last four events for the Lift Tour and make a smooth $100 million or something like that.
I'm really interested in seeing how things develop, right? Because you look at the LPGA Tour, and they're in a unique scenario where they have five majors.
Yes.
Right? And so why couldn't the LIV just make their own majors and have a very, open style one, in the sense that the open, whatever it is, happens to be in the country. And it's just considered a major on that tour. Maybe it's a Saudi Arabian Open and actually lets anybody come in and do it. And they're like, no, you can do whatever you want. PGA Tour players, you want to come qualify? Go for it.
Yeah.
I think that would be really interesting.
There's some things that can happen. Like I said, they've already said that they're moving to 14 next year, right? Is that correct? I mean, who's to say that they're not going to go, hey, we're going to have 20 events, but you only have to play in, right? If we sign you, you only have to play in 10 of them, right? So we can shake it up based on that. And then, be no biggie. You do that. And then we're going to host four opens where if you're here, these guys are qualified, but you can submit your application to play in that. You don't have to be a member of the tour.
No.
And it will be somewhere else. But we're just happen to have we just happen to make this whatever country's open. Now all of a sudden it's a $20 million purse. Wow. Right? Yeah,
why not? Right?
Let's do some shaking up of some things. So
Well,
it'll be
good. I'm excited for things to unfold. But it is equipment time.
It is equipment time.
Now, time to talk equipment. Obviously, one of my favorite segments. We're going to run you through Tony Finau's winning what's in the bag. So the clubs used to win the 3M Open, we have top of the bag, the Ping G425 LST. He's been playing this driver for a long time. And he's got that puppy set at 7 degrees, which is low. But when you swing as fast as Tony does, if you're plus 180 ball speed, you're kind of in a position where you need to go low on your loss. And it's not necessarily a launch characteristic. It's more of a spin characteristic.
Yeah,
when you're swinging that fast, you just generate more spin. And so putting that loft down for a guy that's easily in the mid 180s, that's a smart move, and that's kind of a necessary thing. You don't see very many guys with lofts that low, but
no,
I think that's the qualifier.
I think he does. And to be honest, Ping's generally can spin a little bit more. Is what ball is he playing as well? I mean, that may
Titleist Pro V1.
So he's playing the left out, so he's trying to keep it down there. So my guess is he does generate some spin in that, and so he's just trying to get it there. Like, say, guys with that kind of speed, they get hype from ball speed, right? They can have a 9-degree launch angle and get the same max height as somebody who's maybe 10 miles an hour ball speed less, that they have to launch at 11.5.
And with Tony on this driver, anytime you take a driver with 9 degrees of loft or 10 or whatever, and you're turning it down, the way those hosels work is it actually opens it up too.
Yes.
So it says 7, but it effective loft may be a little bit higher.
Yeah. So the only one that doesn't do that because of their, I don't know how they, is Callaway, because they have the dual thing. So it doesn't move
and
it. So technically too. It doesn't move.
Yeah.
But Titleist has the one, but if
they
you
have
move,
a double,
they have a double, but if you move one of them, it still changes the shaft orientation. So it does open and close it a little bit. So a little bit different, but it's going to open that face up and which is a cleaner look anyway. And it looks better.
It looks good.
But new since the last time he won, and new in the last little bit, I believe, is the 3-wood.
Yeah,
it's a Callaway Rogue ST. They don't say whether it's a Max or a Max LS.
Just an ST. It's probably a tour issue only. It's a bonded hosel. I think the retails have adjustable hosels.
Nope, they're all bonded.
They're all bonded in retail. Well, there you go. So
they're all bonded, and they've got the Max and the Max LS, which would have been something good to know because, right, they're different, right? The Max LS is a smaller head, a little bit different. My guess is that's the one he's going to, but they've been really good this year. Like I said, I wasn't fond of, and the driver's been good as far as the fitting portion of it goes. I wasn't a huge fan of it. I did hit my buddies, and he has a, I don't think it's that one, but he has a Diamond shaft in it, but it felt really good. But my guess is, like I said, he is in the LS, but they're Callaway fairway woods. Like I said, even if I fit guys into a Ping TaylorMade, you know, the Stealth, like if that combination doesn't work for the 3-wood, the first one I grab is the Callaway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm looking at the website. It looks similar to the LS based on its weight port and whatnot, but there is some features that are different that pretty much it's a tour issue scenario. So Not going to be something you find out at your local golf shop, but pretty slick nonetheless. He's still got old trusty, the Nike Vaporfly Pro 3-iron. And if you forgot what that iron looks like, it's all black and has a blue Nike swoosh on it.
Yes. And he's going to play that thing until it breaks.
He will be buried with that 3-iron. It's getting up there as in one of the longest played golf clubs on tour. And we're not talking like same golf club and you keep switching it out. Like this thing is meaning like the same brand, but you keep playing the same one, but it's new.
Right.
Like, this is straight up the exact same club for like ever.
Yeah. Like I said, until it breaks, I think he's going to be using it.
Yeah.
But yeah, then he's his Ping Blueprints for the pitching wedge. He's one of the only guys, and like I said, and this is, I'm surprised it doesn't come up more, but this is one of the few guys that plays the Motus 3 Tour, and it's a 120 TX, which is actually a little bit lighter weight shaft than most of those guys are playing too, right? They're usually playing the 125 to 130s, mm-hmm. depending on what they're doing. And obviously with the TX, it's going to be a little bit, the actual gram weightage is going to be a little bit heavier, but I guess he's got him tipped up a little bit. And so it is what it is. And then he's got the Ping Glide 4.0 in the 50 and the 56. Mm-hmm. But then again, look at what popped up here.
It's again. So strange.
Again, like I said, all is right with the world. It has been for the last few weeks now.
Yeah.
The Wedgeworks Proto 60T.
60T. Hello.
Hello.
And Finau somehow gets 9 degrees out of it, meaning he gets a little bit more of a custom grind that produces a slightly higher lip when it's at address. And so the T grind is just simply the most versatile wedge out there, folks. And obviously it was very popular at the Open and is still very popular because it won at the Open, it won last week, and it won this week.
And there's a whole bunch of them in bags this week. We were going through Vokey Wedge Reps Insta that popped up, and there's quite a few T grinds and low balance L grinds in bags this week. So must be playing firm. I mean, you don't get those in the bag unless it is a course that is suited to that. So there's some guys that'll play that all the time, but usually those are thrown in the bag and put in there.
Yeah,
because of the conditions.
So he's all decked out there, and then he rounds out the bag with the Ping PLD Answer to prototype. It's a fat ping, very long putter front to back. It's black, which I believe is a stainless steel with a black oxide over it.
Yeah.
Super clean putter. He's actually starting to wear out the sweet spot on it, which is a good sign because he's been with this putter for quite a while. And
like I said, after he switched away from his Beretti, which he had to go to a Ping if he could. So it's pretty close to what his Beretti was. But he's seems to be liking it. So
yeah, well, it's been really good, especially last week. So pretty slick. For being a Ping guy, there's quite a few brands in there, which is pretty surprising. He's got Nike, Titleist, and Callaway with his Ping stuff. So pretty cool.
And my guess is, so what does that put him at? 11 clubs? Yeah, because he's got 3 that aren't right now. So my guess is he has 11 club deal, which when he switched over to the PLD, it gave him the option to swap out the 3-wood.
The 3-wood.
Which and was a good move.
Callaway is, you know, he actually used to be sponsored by Callaway before he went to Nike. So he has familiarity playing with Callaway golf clubs. But, yeah, good, solid bag, solid win. Probably not going to see much change out of this guy's bag for a long time. Quick fact about his grips. He's a taller, longer kind of guy. You know, he's 6'4", weighs about 200 pounds. So he's very thin, but he's got big hands. And I think he's, people believe he has the thickest grips on tour. And his buildup is this. It's pretty wild. He starts off with the Lampkin Cord midsize, and they're bright green. Can't miss them. So he's already starting off with a midsize, and he has 12 wraps. That's right. 12 wraps underneath the left hand and 13 wraps underneath the right hand. So it's a very rounded grip. It takes out some of the taper that is barely there in those Lampkin midsize. And that is pretty darn thick, 12 to 13 wraps of tape. So that's a fun fact about his grips. And he's got hands that are big. He can palm a basketball. And when you've got hands that are that long and wide, you've got to get a grip that you can feel comfortable with.
For sure. So yeah, like I said, a lot of special stuff going on in there. So, but that brings us to a couple of other equipment notifications. And this is one that I just, because I've kind of just stopped paying attention to this company a little bit. Just because working in the business, they're kind of a pain in the butt to deal with. So I just decided I don't fit to them a ton anymore, because after their original release, I don't think they've been as good. And I think other companies have kind of caught up a little bit. But BXG, new blade wedges, or blade, not blade wedges, blade irons.
Yeah.
The 37ST. So it'll be interesting to see.
I actually like where this design is going. And I put up a poll online to see if people, what they thought about this weight port right in the back. And since I've been in manufacturing golf clubs, like, efficiency and variability are important as you're making golf clubs. And the reason is you can make a set of irons, and there's still tolerances in each head, but yes, you need to have certain weights in each head to achieve certain swing weights, right? But swing weights also are dependent upon the shafts that you throw in them. So if you're in a factory making a golf club and you get a custom order for X100s and one iron, and then graphite, you know, 105 gram shafts in another, you now have an equipment problem, because the heads may not weigh the right way for both of those sets. They've got to be different to achieve the right swing balance.
Swing weighting can be a pain in the butt.
Totally. Totally.
Which is why lead tape is so great.
Lead tape. But then the true builders are like, well, you know, lead tape is just a band-aid, literally, to building golf clubs, because if you have the right components, then you actually don't need lead tape. But it's really hard to get the right components.
I don't know. If you're even there, right? You can have all the right things, but because of the tolerances, right? And yes, if you had the right components where you had all these out, and this is where the tour gets it a little bit, is because they have them in, and right when they get the head in, they weigh that pitching wedge head, that, right? They have them all weight sorted.
Everything's weight sorted. Yeah.
So, but you can achieve what you want.
Yeah, you can do it the traditional way, but now you have to have like 100 pitching wedge heads on site. You have to have 100 nine irons, maybe not that much. Maybe it's 58 irons, right. 57 iron. You have to bring all this equipment. But if you have an iron with a weight port, you can immediately take that weight port out and then add the weight port you want to balance out the head. And the weight port happens to be dead smack center right behind the CG.
Yeah.
That makes things really easy.
And it's the second gen that they've come out with them, but this is the first. No, I think they had it in there. I can't remember they had it in their old ST. Said we haven't sold a ton of them, but it's because there's, I think, other blades that feel better, perform a little bit better than than theirs.
They did have that weight in there, but there's also a lot of other brands out there that are doing the same thing and that we don't necessarily think about all the time. But Callaway's current Apex blade, its weight port right dead center in the back of the muscle.
Whether you can get access to those weights as a general public,
that's a different story. But another brand that's doing the weight port right back in the middle of the golf, which is not in the middle, it's in the toe, and that is the Ping Blueprints. And they have
they have them in the Blueprints, and then they're 425s. It's right, they've got them in a couple of them, and that's exactly what they're for. But if you ask them for weights, that doesn't happen. But it's so that when they're putting together, if they want to get it, so that they can get those matching throughout the set. So yes.
Yeah. And so you have, as a greater manufacturer, you now have this versatility, and it didn't seem like, something maybe you thought PXG was innovative, but this particular technology even traces back to, I think, like 2011 or 2012, when TaylorMade also had the weight screwed in right in the back. And so there's a lot of good stuff out there, and that versatility is pretty cool when you're looking to make irons for the masses, right? That's the tricky part.
It does keep them clean. Like I said, the one thing is with that is it's in one spot, and it's in the right spot. Right. It's where you would want it. If you're going to put something, that's where you want it. Right. Right behind the center mass. So then you're not trying to throw it. And that's one thing that's always been when you're throwing in a weight in the hosel, it's like, okay, now you're throwing it, but you're putting it in the heel of the club. Is that where you want that weight distributed? At least this way you're distributing it evenly right behind the CG. Like I said, this is where lead tip comes in, because what if you want that weight distributed somewhere different? And that's where you just have to use lead tape if you want that moved around to, back, low, left, or whatever of the club, and so you're moving it around that way.
Yeah.
So there still is a use for the lead tape.
Yeah, there is. But if you get a chance to look at those new irons, the 0317 STs, they actually look really good at address. It's probably one of the cleaner PXG irons I've seen, but it's because it's the Players Club. It's got reduced offset, very clean design. So I'm always a sucker for golf clubs for the tour. But yeah, I loved them. The ones that were appeared, they were actually raw, and they're starting to get some rusted spotting on them. And I mean, if you're like me, then it's cool to see these little gems just start to rust, because they're not just jewelry, they're tools as well. Yeah. And I love to see it.
For sure. Like I said, it's it is a clean looking wedge, or I keep wanting to call them wedges. Clean looking iron. Like I said, we'll see how their performance is. Like I said, I'm sure I'll get them in here into the shop at Impact at some point here as soon as they release. And so they can test them and see if they are what they claim to be.
Awesome.
But some sad news in the biz.
Yeah.
Van Hogen closing its doors.
Yeah, you never want to hear that. And Ben Hogan's had a really interesting story. I mean, first it was Ben Hogan's company, and they did pretty well. And then once Ben Hogan died, you know, the company itself kind of didn't have as much steam, I think. And then it was purchased by Top Flight, I believe. And they kind of reinvigorated the brand with some new blood in there. And then Callaway bought them. And then after that, they kind of did away with the brand itself, but kept some of the branding. So,
yeah, the branding. Apex.
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 And then after that, it reopened again to do a direct-to-consumer, which really is the way things are going, but it's tough out there. It's really tough.
They did try to get, because I know that we had some demo irons for a little bit from Hogan, and they just didn't quite take off, right? But so it was obviously a miscalculation on how they should be marketed, whatever it was, they didn't do it right. So now they're closing their doors, and we'll see whether somebody picks them back up, dusts them off, just like LA Golf Shaft, and has kind of rejuvenated what was Matrix at the time in Golf Shafts, and now they're LA Golf Shafts, and they're doing pretty well, but who knows? Like I said, I think once you lost the Apex name, I don't think like Hogan, it was the Hogan Apex, right? It was always kind of those were synonymous with each other. So whether that hurt them or what, so.
Yeah, it's tough. They said it was based on COVID. I don't know if that's the case.
You can't, because golf went berserk.
Golf went berserk. COVID. Everybody broke, they blew the numbers out. I think right now we're with the recession that we're in, now golf companies are starting to take a hit because of the impact of what had happened, right? A lot of overspending occurred with stimulus checks, which were probably used to buy golf clubs, by the way. And then now with inflation rising, people's funds are tight. They're spending hundreds of dollars extra just on regular living items, which has really hampered their discretionary income. And so I can see that. I mean, if you want to blame it on COVID that way, then you could. Because, everybody's seeing it. Not to mention supply chain shortages. Like, maybe they just couldn't get product to even sell. And that's even for the big companies. You know, I talked to companies like Titleist, who had supply chain issues for golf balls. And they couldn't do the same promos that they normally would do because they just didn't have inventory for it. And so even the big guys got hit by things like that. So it's really interesting how things tie back to all the policies and decisions made during COVID. But they should have made a significant portion of income during that stimulus period with low interest rates across the board that could float them through this more difficult time. But I personally think the only reason that probably didn't happen is because of their particular business model.
Right.
Which is, they tried to stick to the direct to consumer, but even though it seems silly sometimes if you really think about it. Having a big name player golf clubs, having a tour presence, being able to say your golf club's won XYZ, having a local pro on staff in a golf shop, recommending golf clubs. I mean, all these things have small and incremental impact on you selling golf clubs. And it, when you forfeit that entire model, I think it was too drastic of a change.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, there's some that it's worked out for because New Level Golf, who they do have a bigger name now that's, yeah. But he's playing the senior tour and they do have their clubs out there in some other players' heads, but nobody's that they're paying in their marketing for, but they're a direct to consumer. So
yeah, they are, but I think you can still go to like your high-end fitting shops and get custom fit for them. Or did they switch that up?
They took them all out. Wow. They switched it all up. It is completely direct to consumer because we did have them in our shop for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And just the way they were, they, like I said, even if they performed well, it wasn't necessarily something that somebody was looking at getting. So
yeah,
they're like, this new level. So what they've done with how they've marketed it, they've done it the right way, and it may be smaller, and maybe that's where Hogan did. And they're like, oh, we're the Hogan name. We can go direct to consumer and go big and get this. And they just went too big. Who knows?
Yeah. And golf's a funny thing. Like just 10 years ago, you could compare TaylorMade Golf and Wilson, all right? And you would immediately say, oh, TaylorMade all the way, right? They're putting out a new driver every year. They're selling. They got big names, blah, blah, blah. Wilson Golf was making more money than TaylorMade. And that's because they were actually just smart business, right?
Mm-hmm.
TaylorMade was netting $1 billion, but it cost $1.1 billion to operate. So when you do that, you're losing money. But right. As long as your operation costs are less than your profits, then you're actually making money. And that's funny to think about because maybe that's the situation with Hogan. It's just they kind of threw their weight around a little bit too aggressively and they just couldn't keep things going. So
couldn't keep it going. So now they're out. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
It'll be interesting. Like I said, I think they're out, but I don't think they're necessarily dead yet. It's just how it seems to happen with a lot of these companies, especially a company like Hogan that does have some name to it. You know, is somebody going to come along and decide they want to buy that and
yeah.
try to get it started again? So who knows? But yeah, I think that's it. Like I said, I don't know. There's not, next week's going to be pretty bland. So hopefully something, hopefully something comes up. Because now you don't have any majors on any of the tours. You're getting in the last little bit before, I think the week after is the
first playoff event.
So who knows what we're going to have to talk about. I have to find something. Maybe we'll talk putters. I know a guy who makes some pretty good ones.
Well, we're getting there.
So, but yeah, everybody, thanks for listening. And until next time, we're out. Thanks for listening to this episode of Birdies and Bogeys. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe, leave us a rating and review. And until next time, have a great week.